We are continuing with the Braisa towards the bottom of the Amud. We're discussing Karban Pesach. It is a somewhat curious location to be talking about Karban Pesach within our Masechta. Topic of Karban Pesach will be coming up in the fifth parak, and the Masechta will be discussing it from the fifth parak through the ninth parak. So there are five parakim here in our Masechta dedicated to the topic of the actual Karban Pesach itself. Nevertheless, the Mishnah Amem Amud Beis made a comment regarding the Karban Pesach, and so therefore it gave the Gemara an opportunity to discuss some of the details regarding Karban Pesach. Notably, the Mishnah told us that the Karban Pesach cannot be cooked in any kind of fruit juice. As far as the Karban Pesach being cooked in water is concerned, that the Torah says Beferish. The Torah says Ubashel Mevushal B'mayim. Didn't give the proper context, but the Torah says that one is not allowed to cook the Karban Pesach in water. So from the Torah itself, it's very clear you're not allowed to cook in water. The Mishnah's Mechadish, that not only is water going to be prohibited, but other fruit juices as well will be prohibited. If you want to base your Karban Pesach in fruit juice, that's fine. If you want to dip it in some fruit juice, like ketchup, that's fine. But to cook the Karban Pesach in water, so that is going to be prohibited. We've been discussing in yesterday's daf in Mem Aleph the nature of the prohibition and if any onish exists for violating such a prohibition. That is a big part. That was most of yesterday's discussion. Gemara is going to continue along these lines. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're going to open up with a Braisa. Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa starts off. If you had a Karban Pesach that's roasted, meaning to say that you roasted it properly, but you ate in the afternoon, which you are not allowed to do. You have to eat it in the evening. So the Braisa says Chayev, which at the face value means that there's going to be a liability for eating the Karban Pesach because you ate at the wrong time. What liability we're talking about? Stay tuned. Now, if you eat the Karban Pesach where it's partially roasted, so from the time that it gets evening, meaning at the time when you were supposed to be eating the Karban Pesach, it just happens to be that the Karban Pesach that you're eating right now is partially roasted. So that too is going to be subject to a liability. And the Braisa says you're going to be chayiv. Now, Ketan Tzli Dum Yedana. So in the Braisa, side by side, we have two points that are made, followed with the same consequence. That if you eat Tzli at the wrong time, or if you eat Na at the right time, in both of these circumstances, you're going to be Chayv. Now, Ma Na Balav. Now, we certainly know that if you eat Na, if you eat partially roasted Karban Pesach, at nighttime, you're subject to Lav and to Malkus. That is what we established in yesterday's Daf. So now, Af Tzli Balav. So the Gemara says, so then, by putting the braisa side by side and just simply now reiterating the same point as it relates to eating the roasted Karban Pesach at the wrong time, so then you're going to be subject to a lav, which means that you're going to be subject to malchus. And the Gemara wants clarification and a better understanding of what that means. Now, bishlam anaksi v'altochlumi menuna. So as far as the iser is concerned regarding partially roasted, so that is a pasuk like we discussed in yesterday's daf, and the Gemara reiterates we have a pasuk, which clearly outlines it to be a lav, and clearly you're going to be subject to malchus. Elot Sliman Alan, but as far as eating the roasted Karban Pesach, meaning it was properly roasted, but you ate it at the wrong time, so me Nalan, how do I know that one is going to be subject to malchus? So the Gemara says the best we can offer right now is a pasuk that says that you're supposed to eat the Karban Pesach balayla hazeh, on this evening. So balayla in bayom lo. So the implication is that the only appropriate time to eat the Karban Pesach is the evening and not during the day, meaning not the afternoon of the 14th. So the Gemara says, okay, but hai lava ba mechol asehu. V'chol lav haba mechol asei. So the Gemara says, so what we're looking at is, yes, it's true. By virtue of the fact that the Torah tells us what we're supposed to do, inferentially we now understand what we're not supposed to do. So because the Torah says that we're supposed to eat the Karban Pesach in the night, so that implies that we're not allowed to eat it during the daytime. Good, that part I get. So, but when all is said and done, the prohibition of what not to do is only coming about through a implication of what I'm supposed to do. This is what's called in halacha a lav haba mechlal asei, and the general rule is lav haba mechlal asei categorically falls under the category of a mitzvah asei, and there is no punishment for a mitzvah asei for the bitul mitzvah asei. Okay. So what we're struggling right now is to understand is that the Braisa says Chayev. Presumably the Braisa, by saying Chayev, means that you're going to be liable for Malkus. But, as we just got done concluding, well, at best what we're describing over here is a Lav Abba Mechlal Aseh, which falls under the category of an assay, and we are struggling to understand why the Braisa says you're going to get Malkus. I'm Rav Chista Hamani, so the Gemara now attempts to explain the Braisa, and this is Rav Chista's explanation, and that is that the author of the Braisa that we quoted, so that's Rabbi Yehuda. So the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara now is going to make a case. We now on the top of Mbeis Amid Aleph, we learned in a Braisa, Shor V'seh Saruv V'kalut Nidava Taso. Torah says that if I have an animal with a blemish, now the two examples over here in this particular pasuk is Sarua, where the animal is asymmetrical. One limb of the animal is larger than the other. Rashi's example over here, one eye of the animal is larger than the other. Whatever the case is, the animal is asymmetrical. Or Kalut, where the hoof is fused together. Kosher animal obviously is going to have split hooves. This is a kosher animal, but for whatever mutated reason, the hooves happen to be fused together. This is a blemished animal. In terms of kashrus, the animal is still a kosher animal. We discussed this back in Chulin, but in terms of bringing it as a carbon, so in these cases of either sarura or kalut, so it is a blemished animal, and you cannot bring it as a carbon. What do you do with the animal? So the Torah says, nedava tasa, so you make it an nedava, meaning that you give it kedushas damim, it goes towards bedek habayis. Bedek habayis now can sell the animal, and the proceeds can be used towards the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. Good. And now the implication goes as follows. So atam matfis lebedek habayis, the atam matfis damim lebedek habayis. So when the animal is blemished, so that could be earmarked in mukdash for bedek habayis. But if the animal is a tamim, the implication would be that a perfect animal, a non-blemished animal, must go towards a carbon and cannot be mukdash for bedek habayis purposes. So this is implication. So by virtue of the fact that the Torah says what we are supposed to do, so that implies what we are not supposed to do. Once again, we're looking at the category of alav haba mechalal seh. And the Gemara comments on this, mikan, amru. And from here they said the following, kol ha-matfis tumim lebedek habayis over be'aseh, that if I take an animal that's not blemished and I am makdish it for bedek habayis, so one is violating the aseh that we just outlined. Ein li ela ba'aseh belosa aseh minayin. So the Gemara says, good, now I know that it's an aseh. How do I know that it's on top of that also a los aseh tamalamar v'yidaber Hashem ha-moshel emor? So, but the pasuk says, opening this parsha, in parsha Semor, Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, so limin al kol parsha kula shehe belo sase divrei Rabbi Yehuda. The entire parsha is now going to be encapsulated within this lo sase, and all this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Obviously, what we need to clarify, which we're going to do in just a moment, is how does Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'Emor get us to the point where the entire parsha now is below sase? So that will be explained in just a moment in the Gemara. But meanwhile, what we just got from all this is that Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that when I have a lav haba mechalal aseh, and as long as the heading of the parsha is Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'Emor, so that now is able, what it's able to do is take the lav haba mechalal aseh and upgrade it to a lav. Meaning, generally speaking, we do say a lav haba mechalal aseh is an aseh, but now what we're able to do is upgrade it to a lav. So we saw that over here in the Braisa as it relates to an animal that is a tamim, that I was makdish for bedek habayis. So now it is a bona fide lav according to Rav Yehuda. And we're going to say that the Braisa that we quoted previously that discussed eating Karm Pesach before its proper time, so that also is going to go like Shitas Rav Yehuda. So problem solved. We have a solution. It is Shitas Rav Yehuda. Now, how did Rabbi Yehuda know that the lav haba mechalal aseh by the parsha of the tamim is in fact going to upgrade it to a lav just simply because it says vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'Emor, which, as we all know, occurs time and again, introducing many of the parshas in the Torah. So amalo Rabbi lebar kapara my mashma. So how does that work exactly? So the Gemara goes on to explain amalo dichsiv l'Emor lo ne'mar bedvarim. So what we're going to understand is that the word lemor is actually a contraction. And lemor is a contraction of the word lo ne'emar bedvarim. Everything that we're going to be discussing within this parsha is going to fall under the category of a lav. They rav amri, now in the yeshiva of rav, they say over something very similar, and that is lemor, lav amor. It says it in the context of a lav. Not quite sure what exactly is the difference between the two ways we just said it over, but anyway, this is how to understand that, despite the fact that the Torah is giving us a mitzvah saseh, and in doing so we understand what the lav is, and we're only understanding it through implication, but based on the fact that the Torah says And lemor is really contracted over the word lav. So that means that whatever asay we have over there upgrades to a lav. And Tosfos points out over here that the only time that we're ever going to see vayidaber Hashem Moshe lemor taking it and upgrading it to a lav is only when we start off with a lav haba mechal asay. Only in the parshios where we already have the hidden lav, so to say, the implied lav within the asay, then and only then is vayidaber Hashem Moshe lemor going to upgrade it to a bona fide lav. Okay. Adkan, so problem solved. The brice on the bottom of the previous Amud is going according to the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda. Continuing in the Gemara, Meitash Misha Shonachtom, we're talking about the water that the baker is using in order to wash his hands. Tinichad of the Gemara here is going to be quoting a couple of brices in terms of what should be done with the water after it was used with the baking of the matzah. Shofchin, and excess water, obviously. So Shofchin b'makom adron ve'in Shofchin b'makom ha'ishborin. So one brisa says that what you're going to do is that you're going to run off the water on an incline, so the water will just simply drain away. And then another brisa, but what you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to pour it within an ishbarin. Ishbarin is some area where the water collects. And this collected water, being that it is water mixed together with flour, so it's now going to accumulate and it's going to create chametz water, obviously something we want to avoid on Pesach. So that's brisa number one. V'tan yidach. Now in another brisa, shofchim b'makom ha'ishbarin. In the second brisa, it actually allows for the pouring into the ishbarin, into the collected area. And obviously, that's in of itself, it's difficult to understand. Meaning, if it's a collected area, so then why am I allowed to pour water, which I know has both water and flour in it? So that in of itself is difficult to understand. But certainly now, when you put this brisa up against the brisa we said immediately prior, the two brises are so sir. One another. Lokasha had the nefisha de kavu, had the lo nefisha de lo kavu. So the Gemara says, well, if we're talking about a lot of water where there's going to be an accumulation, so then we have a problem. If we're talking about where there is not a lot of water and there's not going to be an accumulation, so then it's going to be fine. Am Rav Yehuda isha lo salu shala b'mayim shalanu. Rav Yehuda says that when a woman is kneading her dough, she should make sure to have water which is shelanu. One of the more comical stories that we're going to be seeing over here. In the Masechta, although earlier in the Masechta, we did have the Gemara's comment about Chulda being a Nevi'ah, okay, which, if you remember, great, and if not, so I think they're about Dav Zion, but anyway, but the Gemara over here now is going to be giving us another, right, intentionally, unintentionally, but a comedic line. So the Gemara says, we start off with a halacha of Rav Yehuda, and that is that a woman should be making sure that when she is going to be baking the matzah, she should use water which is shelanu. Now, what does that mean? So stay tuned as we're going to explain. Darsha Rav Masna b'papunya. So Rav Masna gets up in papunya, and he darshens exactly what we just learned together, that the water that you're using in order to make your matzah is maim shalanu. Now, how did they in the town of papunya understand it? L'macha aysu kuleyama chatzvayu v'asu legabe v'amrele havlan maya. So every member of the town of papunya the next day went over, took their buckets over to the house of Rav Masna. And they said, "Nu, give us your water." Now their understanding is that when Rav Masna said "Maim Shalanu," so what Rav Masna says is that you should be using our water. Meaning Rav Masna says that at least the way they understood it is that when making your matzah, so you should make sure that you're going to be using our water meaning my water. And so the next morning, where they're all bringing their buckets over in order so that they could have some water from Rav Masna Shirayim for Rav Masna for the water in order to bake the matzah. Now, that's not what he meant. And that's not what Rav Yehuda meant when Rav Yehuda initially presented the halacha. Amr lehu, ana b'may devasayu amri. You totally misunderstood me. What I meant is water that stayed overnight. Divas debeso, bas means to stay overnight. So I was talking about water that stayed overnight. Why do you need water that stayed overnight? So Rashi over here explains. You can see the Rashi inside. Shalanu, v'layla memnei shebi yimei nisan amayanos chamim. So in the month of Nisan, so the wellsprings are still warm. It's still the water is still coming from the rain. We're going to be talking about this later in the Masechta. In the sun is going to be going on the incline of the rakia. We're going to explain that a little bit better in Daf Sadidal. It's going to be a little bit challenging, even when we get to Daf Sadidal to fully understand that. But anyway. So based on the season, the water is warm. Okay, we could say it like that. It's nice and simple. Leficha kol ha'olam tzonein, u'mayenos chamim. That's why the wellsprings are still going to be warm. So hilkach melina balayla mitztaninan. So therefore, what we want to do is that we want to make sure that we don't use warm water. Warm water is going to be accelerating the chimus process. So we want to make sure that the water is cooled down. So mayim shalanu, meaning water that you collected, the water when initially collected is going to be a little bit warm. You want to make sure that it cools down. So give it a night to cool down. That's what Rav Masna meant when he said mayim shalanu. That's what Rav Yehuda meant when he said mayim shalanu. Darish Rav of the Gemara continues now to give some more details in terms of the baking of the matzah and how to avoid chametz issues. Isha lo salosh bechama, a woman should not be baking the matzah directly under the sun. So it's going to be hot, and again, that heat is going to accelerate the chametz process, so it should not be done directly under the sun. V'lo bechame chama. It should not be baked with water that was heated by the sun. V'lo b'mayim hagrufim min hamulyar. If you have water that was collected from under the mulyar, some sort of urn back in the day, we discussed the mulyar in more detail back in Shabbos, Masechta Shabbos, but anyway, that water is heated water, and that water now is going to accelerate the chametz process. V'lo sagbiya yada min hatanur ad shetigmor kolapas. Also, a woman should not lift her hand from the bread until the bread is concluded. The general idea, which we touched on earlier, and now we get to say again, is the idea that as long as you're manipulating the dough, so then there is no opportunity for fermentation to begin. Fermentation starts when there is a stagnation, when the dough is at a rest. Then and only then does chametz begin. As I already mentioned, that's not our practice. Our practice nowadays is at the moment that the flour makes contact with the water, we're on the clock, 18 minutes is now from that point going forward, regardless of whether we're working the dough, we're not working the dough, so that's it. We assume that by 18 minutes already, we're going to have chametz issues. Okay, but anyway, according to the strict letter of the law, as long as there's manipulation of the dough, so then it is not going to become a consideration, a concern of chametz. Continuing in the Gemara, v'tzrich shnei kelim. On top of that, also you need two utensils, achad, shemek hatefes bo, one clay in which she's going to be arranging the challah, basting the challah, the echad shemitzanes bo yadeha, and another clay in order for her to cool down her hands. Now, the reason why the two different bowls are necessary is that you want to make sure that you're going to be consistently working with one and not lifting your hands up while working on one. Continuing in the Gemara, Yibailu Avra Velashama, what if a woman was overis? She did not follow the prescription that we just laid out in the Gemara. And she made her matzah in the way Rashi understands the Gemara's question over here. She made it in warm water. What do we say under those circumstances? Marzucha Amar Mutter, Ravashi Amar Aser. So Machlokas Amarim, exactly where to go over here. Amar Marzucha Mana Minala. So Marzucha was a makel. He said that Bidi Evid is going to be fine. And he says, and how do I know that? Because let's go back to what we learned a couple days ago. The Tanya we learned in the Brisa back on Daf Mem, Ein Losasin Hasaorim BePesach, soaking the barley kernels before grinding it up. So this is something that Lechatchila one should not do, right? The Lasisa issue we discussed extensively back on Daf Mem. Anyway, the Brisa that we already learned is that one should not be doing Lasisa with the barley kernels, V'im Lasas. Now, what if you do soak the barley kernels, nisbaku asurim, lo nisbaku mutarim? So if you find cracks in the barley, so that means that the water penetrated into the barley, and therefore, obviously, there's a chimus consideration, and therefore, it's going to be prohibited. On the other hand, if the barley grains were not cracked, so then it's going to be fine, bidiyavid. So the Gemara says, so basically, we could say the same thing over here. So if the Brisa says that one is not allowed to use warm water in order to bake the matzah, but bidiyavid, if they did, it should be fine, just like the case in the Lasisa. Now, the counter argument, and you could probably imagine, the Gemara says it, Rav Ashi Amar, Atukulu Chada Michta Machtinu. So Rav Ashi says, I don't understand. Okay, so in the case of Lasisa, so we're going to be Makel. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be Makel over here. The issues could be very different issues. Right, literally, the Gemara's expression over here is that you're going to stitch together everything with one stitch. It's not all following the same operating principles, and so we'll be makel by lasisa, but we won't necessarily be makel over here. Hechad idmar, idmar, hechad lo idmar, lo idmar. So when the Brisa says that we can be makel like by lasisa, we can be makel. So good. So the Brisa says we can be makel, but over here we can't extend it to this case over here. This is a different issue. This is not the issue of lasisa. This is the issue of using warm water in order to make a dough. Could be that. Even bidiyavid, it's not going to be good. Okay. Hajjan Lachol Shah, that is the end of the second parak of the Masechta. And here now we begin the third parak of the Masechta with a brief introduction. Chametz says, now we've established four, a good part of two prakim here of this Masechta. So Chametz is Asar on Pesach. That, right? That I think we pretty much got down. Not only is it Asar on Pesach, but three Isurim that relate to Chametz on Pesach. One, in Isra Achila, you're not allowed to eat it. Isra Anayla, not allowed to get benefit from it. And Bal Yirah, Bal Yimasa, you're not allowed to own Chametz on Pesach. In addition to that, if one were to violate the Isurim of Achila or Hana'ah, and presumably also Bal Yirah, Bal Yimasa as well, but that part is not totally clear. But anyway, certainly by Achila, if one were to eat the Chametz on Pesach, so one is going to be subject to an Isur Kari. So this is a very serious Isur of the Torah, one in which it only shares with only a select number of Isurim of the Torah, where if one were to eat Chametz on Pesach, so one would be subject to the Isur, to a Chomer Onesh of Kares. Okay. With all that stated, so here in this Perek, the beginning of the opening of this Perek is going to be dealing with the following. Not all Chametzes are made the same, and there's basically, if you would call, right, pure Chametz, right, for lack of a better term, but a Chametz that's really unadulterated and is going to be at maximum Isur, where it's going to be also Ba'achila, Ba'ana, and Ba'yirah, Ba'yamatzeh. And then there's going to be an assortment of types of chametz, which are inferior chametz. We touch on these ideas earlier, but here in this Mishnah, we're going to be dealing with this directly. This Mishnah is going to be the basic source of this idea of inferior type matzahs. Inferior type chametz. Chametz that is not bona fide 100%. Chametz that carries the full brunt of the Isser, but rather chametz that is still going to be usher, but just not with the same degree and level of the Isser as bona fide chametz. There are two types of chametz that fall in this category of inferior chametz. One is what's called tarovis, when you have a mixture of chametz and non-chametz mixed together, and the other is what's called chametz nuksha. Chametz nuksha is basically where, in principle, you could eat it, but it's not particularly edible. So examples will do a much better job explaining this second category. We're going to give a number of examples in the Mishnah and throughout the Gemara here in this Perek. But the basic idea is that if I have chametz falling under one of these two categories of either tarovis or chametz nuksha, so then it's not going to be as usher as the actual chametz itself. Okay. When I have these categories of tarovis and chametz nuksha, so we're saying now that it is a level lower than the bona fide chametz. So what does it mean now in terms of limiting the onesh? The way Rashi understands it, and I'll show you Rashi in just a moment as we start with the Mishnah, the way Rashi understands it is that still, in the case of Tarovis, and in the case of Chametz Noksha, it's still Asur Ba'achila, and Hana, and it's still subject to Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh. The only thing that it is going to be, its level of diminishment is that it just simply does not carry with it the punishment of Kares. So it is going to be a lav, it just does not come with it the onesh of Kares. That is Rashi's understanding. Rabbeinu Tam's understanding is that it's even less than the way Rashi described it. According to Rabbeinu Tam, you can see Rabbeinu Tam right here, first Tosfos in our Perek. Rabbeinu Tam says that when I have either Tyrovitz or Chametz Nuksha, so there's not even an Isser of Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh. The only Isser is going to be an Isser of Achila, but not Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh. Whether, according to Rabbeinu Tam, Isser Ana is subsumed in Isser Achila, not perfectly clear, but certainly the idea is that there is no Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh by these two inferior categories of Chametz. So basically what comes out is that you have a major debate between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam regarding the extent of Isser for these lower level chametz. According to Rashi, still going to be also Ba'achila, Ba'ana, and Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, it will be also Ba'achila, but it will not be also in Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh. Okay, so we have a major debate between these Rishonim, between grandfather and grandson. Let's start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah now is going to give us the examples of Tarovitz and Chametz Nukshav. Elo over in Be'Pesach. So these are the things that one is going to be in violation of. Rashi's understanding of these words of the Mishnah. Rashi, look at the first Rashi in this Perek. Elo over Malayim Bevayirah Vayimatzeh. The Rashi says Beferish over here that what the Mishnah means to say is that this is what you're going to be subject to regarding the issur of ownership. And we're going to go through every one of these in the Gemara. So I'll read them quickly over here in the Mishnah, but let's know that the Gemara is going to be discussing everyone in detail. So right now in the Mishnah, I don't have to explain them in detail. However, what I can do is I can organize, and that is that here in the Mishnah, we're going to be talking about four different examples of something that is universally drunk. It just happens to be produced in different locations, right? Bavel, Madai, Edom, Mitzrayim, and what the actual product is, we're going to get into detail. And these first four examples are all going to be examples of tarovas. They're all going to be mixtures. So that is Kutach HaBavli, Sheikh HaMadai, Chometz HaAdomi, Zesom HaMitzri. So these four items mentioned in the Mishnah, so they're all different types of tarovas. Again, they're going to be explained in much greater detail when we go through the Gemara. Then the Mishnah goes and gives us a list of three items which are used by different craftsmen, and they are all a wheat or barley-based paste. It just happens to be that they're not that appetizing. They're edible, but they're not that appetizing. Here, these are examples of what's called chametz nuksha, and so the Mishnah, we're going to go through it quickly. In the Mishnah, again, when we get to the Gemara, we're going to explain all of them in much greater detail. V'zaman shel tzavayim, v'amelam shel tavachim, v'kolm shel sofrim. So these are different examples of different types of wheat or barley-based pastes. And we'll see exactly what the function of these are. But again, edible, but not that appetizing. Falling under the category of chametz nuksha. And again, according to Rashi, what it means is that the iser karis is removed, but all the other isurim are still there. The onish of karis is removed, but the isurim are still there. Now, Rebbe Lazar adds to this also tachshit enoshim, certain cosmetics that a woman puts on, which again are either going to be wheat or barley based. Wheat, barley, or it could be any one of the five grains, but the idea is that he adds that to the list. The Gemara is going to discuss why. Zaklal, and here we go. The Mishnah says this is a rule, and that's kol shu mimin dagan, anything which is a grain, hariza over bepesach, one is going to be a violation of Pesach. Now it's an azara, meaning it's a lav, but one is not going to be subject to the karis penalty. Now again, the way Rashi understands it is that the lav over here is going to encompass both eating and benefiting and ownership. And the only difference between this and bona fide chametz is that this does not carry with it the chomer of karis, and bona fide chametz is going to carry with it the onish of karis. Good. Adkan Divrei Mishnah, we have an outline of the Mishnah, but we really don't know with any kind of detail what the Mishnah is describing over here. We start with the Gemara. Gemara begins on Rabbanu Shlosha Dvarim Ne'amarim B'Kutach HaBavli. So as long as the first item mentioned in our Mishnah is Kutach HaBavli, so the Gemara is going to take more than just an opportunity to speak about Kutach HaBavli. Kutach HaBavli comes up throughout Shas, and it's one of those things which was clearly a fan favorite. It was consumed all the time. It was a dip, and it was made out of a combination of breadcrumbs and whey meaning whey, right? Some curdled milk, salt, and there may be other things that go in it as well. Anyway, the point is that because of the breadcrumbs that are there, it is a tarovas that has a mixture of chametz mixed into it. The Gemara over here in the beginning of the third parak of Pesachim is not going to have a good word to say about the Kutach HaBavli in terms of how healthy a food it is. And here the Gemara starts off. This is a braisa. Mitzamtem es halev. It clogs up the heart. Mitzameis ha'inayim. It diminishes eyesight. Umachish es haguf. And what it's going to do is weaken the body in total. Mitzamtem es halev mishum nesuvah dechava. As far as the heart is concerned, because of the weight that it has, right, the curdled milk, so that's not good for the heart. As far as diminishing the eyesight, it's got salt in it, and that salt is corrosive towards eyesight. And as far as just being bad for the entire body, that's because it is a little bit moldy, and the mold in it is just simply not good for the body in total. So there are three things which are going to create more waste, and it's going to bend over the body, meaning and not give you a good posture, meaning you're not just simply not going to be as healthy, and it's going to take and it's going to diminish some of your eyesight, a 500th of your eyesight. What are these three items? So the Braisa lists paske ve'elohein, and they are paske bar, bread that's not clean. We talked about this in the previous perek. When you do not soak the grains prior to the grinding of the grains, so there's going to be that bran and a lot of impurities that remain on the grain, and so the bread that results from that is what's called paske bar. Shecher chadash, right? New beer, beer that has not undergone a fermentation process, and yerechai, and raw vegetables. So these are the types of things that are not good for you. Okay, so when told eat your vegetables, so you'll say the Gemara Pesachim Daf Mem Beis. Although, to be fair, Rashi over here says that we're not talking about all vegetables. We're talking about vegetables like leeks, like onions, things that are just difficult to eat in its raw state. That's Rashi's understanding. So, truth of the matter is that vegetables that can be perfectly in its raw state, according to Rashi, does not seem to fall into this category. Anyway, continuing in the Gemara Tana Rabbanan, we are two lines from the bottom. Shosh Advarim, Mim'atin Es Hazevel, V'zokfin Es Akama, Me'irin Es Ainayim. So there are three things that are going to diminish the amount of waste that comes out of you. Right? The Gemara over here is clearly meaning it in a positive sense. And straighten out your posture and enlighten you and give you better eyesight. And they are Pasnikia, clean bread, Basar, Shamein, fatty meat, and Yayin Yashan, and vintage wine. The Gemara goes on to describe Pasnikia as far as the clean bread is concerned. Now as we turn to the top of the Amud Beis, De Smida. It's coming from fine flour. We discussed that also back in the previous parak. Basar Shamein, De Sapirto, De Lo Iftach, an example of fatty meat. So a goat that did not give birth yet, a female goat that did not give birth yet. So this is an example of fatty meat. You can't ask me. I don't have any details of why specifically that as the example. And Yan Yashan, and as far as old wine is concerned, Atik Atike. So we're talking about where it is pretty old. What does that mean, pretty old? Rashi says 3 years. So it has to have been fermenting for the last 3 years in order for it to qualify as old wine, which is good for you. Kalmila Demale Lahai Kasha Lahai Vidikasha Lahai Mal Lahai. Now the Gemara points out that although, generally speaking, we could say that a food is good for one part of your body, that doesn't mean that it's good for another other parts of your body. And generally speaking, there's always going to be a give and take with every food, right? So foods in general might be good for one aspect of your body, but not necessarily for other aspects of your body. That's the general rule. Bar, mizang bili retiva, with exception to fresh ginger, pilpule erichte, long peppers, apasnikia, and clean bread, ubasar shamein, and fatty meat, v'yayin yashan, and the old wine, demala lukula gufei. Gemara says these are exceptional, and these are things that are good for the entire body. Sheikha Amadai. So Gemara took us on a little bit of a tangent after the Mishnah went and discussed the Kuta Chabavli, and the Gemara discussed how not healthy it is. Anyway, so that was the first example of a Tarovis Chametz, where again, let's just say like Rashi, where although it is chametz and one is going to be subject to all these term of chametz of achila hana and valira bayamatze, but it doesn't carry with it the kari's penalty because it is the tarovus and therefore it is just one level below bona fide chametz. And now as far as the next items of the mishnah, so we got three more items to go. Sheikh, more than three, but three nationality items. The sheikh Ramadai. So deramu beisara, deramu beisara. So barley water was placed inside of it. Just a word about their beer. We made this point already numerous times before, but let's clarify. Their beers were not a product of barley, like most of our beers are, but rather their beers was a product of fermented dates. And so therefore, their beer in of itself was a totally non-chametz item. It's fermented dates. Fermented dates does not produce chametz. And so therefore, their beer in general had no issues of chametz. Meanwhile, the Mishnah said that when it comes to the Shecher Hamadai, so that is going to be a problem regarding Pesach. Why? Because they threw in a little bit of barley into the fermented mix. And so once again, this is now an example of Tarovis. Our beer, just to contrast, our beer is made up totally of barley. So our beer is Chametz Gomor, meaning our beer is not only Chametz, but it's super Chametz. It's the highest degree of Chametz in which if one were to drink it, so one would be subject to the Kari's penalty. The beer mentioned over here is talking about their beer, which is predominantly made out of dates, but if you're throwing in a little bit of barley, so now it's Tarovis, and that's why it made it into our Mishnah. The chametz adom, and now we're talking about the vinegar that is made in Edom. The shara beisari. Now vinegar obviously is a product of wine. It's wine that fermented. And so once again, it's a non-chametz entity. So why is it made in our Mishnah? So chametz adomi. So as far as vinegar from Edom is concerned, they had to throw a little bit of barley in there. Why did they have to throw a little bit of barley in there? So as will become evident in the upcoming Gemara, it's because without throwing a little bit of barley in there, it's never going to ferment. Meaning it never will it never will turn into vinegar. It will always stay as wine. And the Gemara man now comments on exactly this phenomena. Amar Rav Nachman b'tchil k'sheyum mevi'in Nesachim Yehuda. Originally, before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and Nesachim was brought in from the province of Yehuda, lo hayu yeinam shel Yehuda machmitz ashenos nesachos se'orin. So the wine that comes from Yehuda, it's such a superior quality that it never fermented. It never soured. It never turned into vinegar. And the only way that it would turn into vinegar is if we kick-started it into turning into vinegar. How do you do that? By throwing in some barley. Throwing in some barley is going to kick-start the fermentation process. Without throwing in the barley, it's just going to remain fermented grapes, otherwise known as wine. Now, the hayu koron oso chametz tam. Now, anytime you speak about vinegar at this historical period of time, so we now know that what we're really describing over here is that, yes, it's vinegar, but also had a little bit of barley mixed in, so it was a tarovus of chametz. Good. Now, the achshav, nowadays, meaning what now he's describing, is that now that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, ein yenam shel edomim machmitz. So now, the quality of wine that we used to experience, so now the Edomites are experiencing it, and Edomites over here probably is a reference to the Romans. And now their wine is the one that is experiencing all this wonderful quality, and in order for their wines to ferment, they're going to have to add in barley, like we just described how it used to be with the wine of the province of Yehuda. Now this vinegar is referred to as Chometz HaAdomi, the Kaim HaShenemar. Now this idea that before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so we benefited tremendously, and we had this really blessed wine. And the only way that it would ever turn into chametz is if we kickstarted it. And then after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, so then we lost that bracha, and then in turn it was given over to Edom. And the Gemara says, and we have psukim that describe this phenomena, imala hachariva, imala zu chavizu, imala zu chavizu. So first the Gemara turns to a pasuk in Yecheskel, that describes this phenomena that when one is full, the other one is destroyed, meaning that the relationship between the Bnei Yisrael and Edom is that when our stock is up, their stock is down, and when their stock is up, our stock is down. Rav Nachma Yitzchak also arrives at the same conclusion, but he learns it from a different pasuk. Ula om mil om ye'emas. Rivka going to the Navi, to Yeshiva Shem, in order to understand why exactly the babies are kicking inside of her. Right, she didn't even know she was having twins. Anyway, the Navi says, Shnei goyim bebenech. So you have two nations within you. Ula om mil om yamas. And what's going to happen is that one nation is always going to be subjugated by the other nation. Now, being that the two nations coming out of her are Yaakov and Esav, so that basically are going to be the progenitors of Yisrael and Edom. And again, it's the same basic idea, just being generated from a different source. This idea that when one is up, the other one is down, and whichever way. So if Yisrael is up, Edom is down. If Edom is up, Yisrael is down. Okay. Tanya, Amar Rebbe Yehuda, Biyuda. Rebbe Yehuda says that Bi Yehuda, in the province of Yehuda, Brishon originally, Halakei Chometz, Me Amaretz, if you purchased vinegar from an Aretz, in a Sarach Lasser, so there's no need to take off Shumas HaMaisos, Mimesha Chazak, and Aba Elam, and a Temed, because that is coming from Temed. Temed basically is, for a lack of better term, and this may not speak to everybody over here, but Temed is basically bug juice. It's flavored grape juice, and we're going to explain it in more details in just a moment. But when you have flavored grape juice, and now that sours and that becomes vinegar, so the way Rav Yehuda says it is that there is no need to be marfit shumas amaisos when you purchase from an Am Haaretz. Normally, when you purchase any type of produce from an Amaretz, you have to take off Shumas HaMaisos, but not when you're buying the vinegar of that's produced from Temed from an Amaretz. Now, nowadays, when you're buying vinegar from the Amaretz, now you do have to take off Shumas HaMaisos, Shechazkaso enoba ela minayayin. That's coming from a grape product, and so that is its sourcing is something that's chayv in chumas amaisos. When it becomes vinegar, it's still chayv in chumas amaisos. And when you're buying it from the Amaretz, so the chances are, right, like any time you buy from an Amaretz, there is a chance that you can take off chumas amaisos. And the Chachamim legislate that you have to take off chumas amaisos, otherwise known as the principle of demai. Anyway, with all that stated, what comes out over here is the following. That if what you're getting is temed, so, and you purchase that from an Amaretz that does not require hafrashas chumas amaisos. And that is the shita of Rav Yehuda. The Gemara is challenging. V'sav Rav Yehuda temed lo lav bar isurehu. You mean to tell me that when I'm buying not wine, but flavored wine, so that is halachically described as temed, and according to Rav Yehuda, you're telling me that that's not chayav and chumas amaisos. The Gemara says, I don't think you're right. That's onion. Now, the Gemara calls it a brisa, but really it's the Mishnah. And the Mishnah in Maisros, in the fifth perek, says as follows. Ha metamed, menasa mayim b'mida, umatze kedei midaso pater. If you're making temed. Now, over here, there is a flavoring agent. And you pour in water, and water comes out. Now, if you happen to measure, and you know that the amount of water that comes out is the exact same amount of water that went in, so now you know that the flavoring agent was just that. It was just a flavoring agent. But no content of the flavoring agent actually went into this temed. And under those circumstances, the Tanakhama says, it's not chayv and chumas amaisos. Even though the flavoring agent, it's probably something made from grape. And you'll see why I'm being ambiguous about what it is. But it's probably something that's made from grape. But as long as the flavoring agent is not physically present in this, in the water. So basically what we're looking at is water over here. And water, obviously, you don't have to be mafish, chumas, and maisos and waters. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev. Now here in the Bryce, Rabbi Yehuda says that you're chayev. So even though it's temed, and even though the same amount of water that went in came out, and even though you could basically say it's flavored water, it is flavored water, still Rabbi Yehuda says that you're chayev. Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that flavored water still is going to take on the properties of what's flavoring it. If what's flavoring it is a grape product, so then the flavored water is going to be treated like a grape product, and therefore you're chayev and chumas amaisos. Okay, what do we have over here? It's called a stira. We just learned together that according to Rabbi Yehuda, temet is chayev and chumas amaisos in the previous brisa. Rabbi Yehuda said that when I purchase temet from an amaretz, I don't have to take off chumas amaisos. So that's called the stira hachikamar. So the Gemara says there's a couple of ways to answer for the stira, and the Gemara is now going to go over two different ways to how to explain. Number one, hachikamar lo nechshedu ame aretz al hatemed. So one way to understand is that really it's chayv and chumas amaisos, like Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah that we quote in the fifth parak of Chumas. As far as the previous statement that when I purchased it from an ame aretz, I don't have to take off chumas amaisos. So in the first approach, we're saying like this. When you're buying your temet from an ame aretz, what's the concern? He didn't take off chumas amaisos, meaning our general concern that an ame aretz does not take off chumas amaisos. In the case of temet, there's no reason to be concerned. Why? Because what's the resistance of an ame aretz taking off chumas amaisos is that he doesn't want to suffer financial loss. Taking off chumas amaisos is a good chunk of the produce. It's going to be somewhere around 20% of the produce is going to be taken off for chumas amaisos, 2% for the truma gedola, another 10% for maaser rishon, depending on what year it is, another 10% either for maaser sheni or maaser ani. So we're talking about 20% that's going to go away. And that obviously is going to be a financial loss. So the ame aretz, so part of what's holding him back, could be just his general attitude towards mitzvahs, but also certainly what it could be is that it's the financial loss that he doesn't want to suffer. So in general, so that's a concern. But when it comes to temed, it's not a concern because what is going to be the cost of making temed? It's water. Obviously, there's a flavoring agent. But as we just learned together, when you pour in the water, the same amount of water comes out that goes in. You're not talking about major expenses over here. It's basically water. And so now that there's no longer any kind of financial loss concern, so when it comes to temed, that's what Rav Yehuda is teaching us. That in the case of temed, because there's really no chance of real financial loss, so the ame aretz go ahead and they're mafish shetrumos amaisos. So in our first approach, we're saying that according to Rav Yehuda, by temed, you're chayiv to take off trumas and maizros, and at the very same time, because it's cheap, we're not worried about the amei haaretz not taking off trumas and maizros. That's all approach number one. The Ibai Sam and the Gemara gives us a second approach. And that is Nechshadu, that really, in general, the amei haaretz are suspected of not being mafish trumas and maizros. So that explains the Mishnah and trumas that we just learned together. What about the Braisa? Ha bidarvaka, ha bidportsane. Forgive us for pronunciation, I probably butchered it, but basically it depends on what the flavoring agent is. If the flavoring agent is darvaka, darvaka is actual product of the grape, and so that's what went into this temed. So under those circumstances, so now there's a bona fide chiyuv to be mafresh shumas amaisis, because now we're not just looking at a flavoring, but we're looking at actual physical content of the grape that went into this mixture. And so therefore, this temen now is actual grape product. If, on the other hand, what we use to flavor it is just simply the portsane, so those are the seeds of the grapes. And yes, they're going to create flavoring, but they're not really going to be infusing any kind of real grape content into the mixture. And under those circumstances, when all said and done, it's flavored water, and there's no chiv of being mafresh shumas amaisos. Okay, so a discussion so far in the Gemara regarding items number 2 and 3 in the Mishnah, and now we're up to item number 4, and that's the Zeisam HaMitzri. Zeisam HaMitzri, my Zeisam HaMitzri, so good. So the Gemara wants to know, what are we describing over here, Tana Rav Yosef? So Rav Yosef taught the following, and that's Talta Sari, a third of it is barley. Talta Kortami, a third of it's going to be, I believe, saffron. Talta Milcha, a third of it's going to be salt. Rav Papa Mapik Sari, Ma'ayochite. Rav Papa in his a mixture of this Zeisam HaMitzri, so he replaces the barley with wheat. V'siman chasisni, now just as a mnemonic to help you remember that Rav Yosef said the barley, so it's the samach of Rav Yosef and the samach sound of the word sa'orim, it's a phonetic issue. So that is going to be your mnemonic to help you remember how Rav Yosef understood how to construct the Zeisam HaMitzri, unlike Rav Papa. Rav Papa took out the barley and replaced it with wheat. Throughout Shas, by the way, Rav Papa was our brewer. He was our beer crafter throughout Shas. So the Gemara elsewhere talks about his wealth came about through the manufacturing and the sale of beer. Anyway, Taraluhu, the Gemara over here just gives us some more details regarding the Zeisam HaMitzri. These things were soaked together. V'kalaluhu, they were cooked. V'tachnaluhu, then they were ground. V'shasiluhu, and then they were drunk. V'divcha v'adatzarta, from Pesach until Shavuos, to kamet marapeleu v'derafei. And the Gemara says it's great for the GI tract. For those who are constipated, it loosens you. For those who are loose, it constipates you. Now, if you're already sick or you are a pregnant woman, so then it's the sakana, and then you should not be drinking the Zeisam HaMitzri. Okay. That takes us through the four items that in our Mishnah are all different types of drinks. So all of them are examples of tarovis, chametz, and again, according to Rashi, it's asr b'achila b'hana, and it's also asr in b'ayir b'ayim matzei. It just happens to be that there's not going to be within it a chiyuv of kares. Reasons, by the way, which we haven't even established yet. The Gemara is yet to establish how we know that if it's a tarovis, so it's going to be asr. Stay tuned, that's coming up a little bit later on, not in today's daf. And we're just going to quickly run through the next three items of the Mishnah. Zomam shel tzavaim. So hacha targima here in Bavel. They translate it as my dechivet de savibu liba. So it is bran water that is used to dye. Okay, so that's the zomam shel tzavaim. It's basically a bran product, a product of presumably the bran of wheat that is used for the purposes of dyeing. And again, it's a product which is not appetizing, but certainly edible, and therefore it's what's called chametz nuksha. Amelan shel tabachim. So what is that? So the Gemara goes on to describe pasvur shloi v'yishlish. So we're talking about bread made out of grain, but the grain was significantly underdeveloped, underripened. Shemnich api akeder v'shoav es azuama. And so what this dough does is that you put it on the edge of the pot, and what it's able to do is it's able to collect a lot of the shmutz that comes out of the pot. Kolon shel sofrim. The third item mentioned in the Mishnah, what exactly is that? Hacha targima here. In Bavel, the translation is perure de ush cafe. So the shoemaker has some sort of paste. Again, it's a wheat-based paste that the shoemaker is using in order to put the shoe back together. So despite the fact that basically it's a form of glue, but it's an edible glue. Again, not appetizing, but edible. Rav Shimi Mechuzana Amar Zuti Pulon Shal Benos Ashirin Shemesharis Osam Liv Nos Aniyim. So the Gemara gives an alternative explanation of what we're describing, and that is basically a paste used by a woman in order to remove hair, specifically leftovers by the wealthy women that they donate to the poor women in order so that the poor women have some sort of hair removal. Ini, the Gemara says, Va'atana Rebbe Chiya. Now the Gemara says, now this pshat that we just offered is a little bit difficult because of the Braisa Rebbe Chiya, which is Arba Mine Medina. Look, if you want to organize our Mishnah, break it down, the first four items of the Mishnah are Mine Medina, meaning that they're made by various nationalities, like we already observed back in the Mishnah, right? Obviously, I got the idea from this Gemara right over here. So the first four items are all examples of Tarovis, but basically, they are consumable by all, just happen to been created by various nationalities. Ushlosha Mine Umnos. Now, the latter three items mentioned in the Mishnah, so those are made by particular craftsmen. Now the Gemara says, now if you're suggesting that the third item of the second category of our Mishnah is a paste, some sort of wheat or barley paste that's given over by the wealthy women to the poor women so that they can remove their hair, so my mine umnos ika. So what does that mean that it's used by certain craftsmen? This is not a craftsman's item. So ve'alamai perudish kafe. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's go back to our first pshat, which clearly you're favoring. And that is that it's the glue used by the shoemaker, the Schneider. So the Gemara says, "Amai karilei hai kolon shel sofrim kolon shel ratzanim ibayilei." So then I'm just bothered by the textual issue, which is that the way the Mishnah should be describing it is not kolon shel sofrim, but rather kolon shel ratzanim. The word ratzan in the Mishnah is referring to the shoemaker or the shoe. So Amar Rav Oshia laolam perurei dushkafe. The Gemara says we're going to go with our first pshat, that we're talking about a glue that's used to hold shoes together. And umay karelei, ve'amay karelei kolon shel sofrim. Why is the Mishnah using the language of kolon shel sofrim? The sofrim nami madbikin behu niroseyim. Because there were dual purposes, dual usages for this paste. It was used by the shoemakers in order to keep the shoes together. It was also used by paper makers in order to bind the papers together. So that's why the Mishnah describes them as kolon shel sofrim. And now just a quick recap of the daf. We finish off our discussion from yesterday regarding the Karban Pesach. The idea that if I were to eat the roasted Karban Pesach roasted properly, but ate it at an improper time, is one going to be subject to a malchus penalty. It is what is called an alach alava ba mechlal asay. Generally speaking, it falls under the category of an asay. It's a positive commandment. If I know that what I'm doing is wrong, but based on an implication of what I should be doing, so is one going to be subject to malchus? Generally speaking, the answer is no. There's a sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that says that a lav haba mechlal asay, under specific circumstances, is in fact going to be considered a lav, subject to malchus. The braisa is going like the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. That was point number one. A second point that we discussed, we went back to the baking of the matzah and various chimutz concerns. And the Gemara, the end of the parak, just went over some very basic ideas in terms of how to avoid any kind of chametz issues. In terms of the water that we are draining away, how exactly should we be draining it? Should it go in a drain on a slant? Is it, can I just simply put into a crevice in the ground where it collects? Okay, it depends on how much water it is. The water that you use has to be cool water. And the Gemara told us a halacha regarding Maim Shalanu, which originally they didn't fully understand what was meant. But anyway, the idea is that the water needs to be cooled down so that there is no fermentation that's going to be accelerated. Various kalim are needed by the woman who is going to be arranging the dough in order to make sure that her hands do not get too warm while working. All the while she's working the dough, the chametz itself is not going to ferment. An idea that we expressed earlier, we saw it here at the end of the second parak. And finally, the halacha very clearly that one cannot bake the masa neither under the sun nor with water that was heated. And if one does so, what would result? Is the matzah going to be kosher matzah? The Gemara cites a debate at the end of our perek on this very issue. That took us to the end of the second perek of the Masechta, and we opened up our third perek here of Pesachim, in which the way Rashi understands that Eila Ovrim bePesach, if you have these lower level chametz items, either tarovas of chametz or chametz nuksha, so one is still going to be in violation of chametz on Pesach, with the only reduction is that one is not going to be subject to the onish of karis. But nevertheless, it's still going to be usur to eat, benefit, and own it. Shitas Rabbeinu Tam is not in agreement with Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam is of the position that the isur is only for eating, not for ownership. Anyway, see the first Tosfos in our perek for that discussion between Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi. Meanwhile, in the Gemara went through the four and three items mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah gave us a listing of four items which are examples of Tarovis. The Mishnah also gave us three items which are examples of Chametz Nuksha. And then the Gemara just simply went through each one of them. The first example of the Mishnah, Kuta Chababla, the Gemara spent a good amount of time. That's Tarovis number one. Tarovis number two of the Mishnah, Shechar Amadai. We talked about the differences between our beer and the beer in the time of the Gemara. Chometz Adomi, the vinegar, Edomite vinegar, which in order to jumpstart the fermentation process, they had to throw a little bit of barley. So that, once again, is another example of Tarovis and Zeisam HaMitzri. And the Gemara gave us the exact recipe for Zeisam HaMitzri, another example of Tarovis. Then the three examples of various wheat or barley-based pastes and glues, which are edible but not appetizing. And that falls under the category of Chametz Nuksha. Zaman Shel Tzavayim, the brand, which is used as a dye. Amalim Shel Tabachim. The Gemara described that as being some sort of dough made from not totally ripened wheat in order to help absorb some of the schmutz that comes out of the pot. Not the best of my understanding. Anyway, and finally, the Kol Shel Sofrim, which the Gemara describes basically as some sort of wheat-based glue that can be used to hold the shoes together. Certainly not appetizing, but again, edible, falling under the category of Chametz Nuksha.